Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of One Day Fantasy Sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, we headed in different directions after Super Bowl 52. I headed east, and you're now out west.
Yep, and the only thing that was common about where we headed was we headed for warmer weather.
Yeah,
I don't ever want to be that cold again.
Oh,
tell Goodell, tell Mr. Goodell next time you talk to him that cold weather Super Bowls, no.
Well, Jeff, I went out the night before, and I know everyone was just bundled up, and you think, how are people going to kind of, you know, any kind of events that they have to be at dressed nicely? You just can't. You had to dress like you were a snowman. But what a game it was. It was incredible. 1,151 yards of total offense, the most combined yardage of any game in NFL history, not just a playoff game, not just a Super Bowl, of any game in NFL history. We were fortunate in a fantastic position, by the way, in our Sky Sports studios to witness NFL history.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable that as you watch the game unfold, that there would be one punt in the game.
Mm.
I mean, New England's punter never even got on the field other than to go out and hold for the field goal. So it just was a dominant day by both offenses and really defensively, particularly, and I think particularly with the Patriots, they just did not play well at all. There were so many times that they were, you know, just doing things that were uncharacteristic of, you know, of Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia's defense.
Now, we're going to break down Super Bowl 52 for you. We'll look at Nick Foles, the aggressive play calling of Doug Peterson, Tom Brady going down fighting for the New England Patriots. We'll talk about Bill Belichick and Malcolm Butler in a little while, Jeff, because that is very interesting how all of that played out given the defensive problems that the Patriots had. We'll talk about Minneapolis and what we thought about the city, although we've already given a hint that it was very, very cold. And we'll look at Josh McDaniels. And we talk all the time about how there is no off-season in the NFL, and we are already, just a couple of days in, facing a major talking point as Josh McDaniels backs out of the job as head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff, let's start with Nick Foles. What a fairy tale story it was. He went 28 of 43, 373 yards, 3 touchdowns. He also caught a touchdown just before the half. And I think I saw numbers, Jeff. I think he was 11 of 16 for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns on third down. And sometimes he was sticking it into some tight windows. Just your thoughts on Nick Foles in what was clearly the game of his life.
Well, I didn't, you know, to be honest with you, Neil, I never thought that he could do consistently the things that he did during the course of that game. His third down completions were outstanding, you know, and they were in some long down and distance situations. Mm. He was able to pick it up in critical downs. I mean, you know, late in the game, the play that just resonates with me is he throws a crosser to Aguilar. And Aguilar wiggles out of the tackle and gets a first down. And that's the spot that the Patriots, you know, 2 weeks before against Jacksonville had gotten a 3-and-out and then got the short field and eventually won the football game. So that play right there was the one I thought that was just, he made a great throw. He put it on the front side of the receiver so that, you know, he could have momentum on the catch to break the tackle. And again, on the flip side, there's a young special teams player out there playing that would have never been in that situation if it had been the case of Malcolm Butler, you know, being healthy. And then Patrick Chung went down, and now you've got a guy that, you know, that just doesn't belong in that situation in a crucial down, and, you know, you get beat. And that's just what happens when you have those kind of issues.
Yeah, the player you're referring to, Johnson Badamosi, who's been primarily a special teams player all year, misses that tackle. The Eagles picked up a couple of big fourth downs as well. We'll talk about one that went to Nick Foles in just a moment because it kind of ties in with Doug Peterson's play calling on the night. And, of course, A big fourth and one on the game-winning drive to Zach Ertz before he hits Ertz again for the touchdown to win it. Jeff, when we look at what you just said there about you didn't expect Foles to make some of the throws that he made, do you think that New England didn't expect that either? Because they kind of dared him to beat them, didn't they? You're talking a lot in our show about the Bear front and how they were trying to basically shut down the run. And Nick Foles said, okay, well, I will go out and beat you.
Well, I think, you know, again, that's been Belichick's deal, is he's always said that we're going to take away what you do best and make you beat us with something that you're not, that you don't want to do or you're uncomfortable with. And so I think they, you know, they got in the Bear front so that to take away the RPO game and it helped stop the run. But when you do that, it locks you into some coverage stuff. Now they tried to play some variations, but really all you get is single high man from that look. So if you can't match up in man-to-man, and when Malcolm Butler went down, or went, you know, again, not went down, when Malcolm Butler was sat down as a defensive player, you know, now you've got mismatch issues. Mm-hmm. Then Chung goes down, and now you're really in trouble because you're out there with guys that, as you said, Bademosi is a special teams guy. That's all he is. And, he probably, to be honest with you, Neil, if Butler practiced all week and, you know, when you look at how the rotations go in pro football and practice, he probably didn't get very many reps at all in that system. So, you know, it's just an unfortunate thing if you're a New England fan. And that goes back to something that you and I talked about, you know, after the game, you know, with this Malcolm Butler situation. And about whether you sit a guy down in that situation, you're playing for a world championship, and you risk all the other guys having an opportunity to get a ring to send a message to one guy or to the rest of your football team. You know, that's an open for discussion. We could talk a whole show on that.
Well, we'll stick with Butler then, Jeff. Let's talk about that, and then we'll double back on Doug Peterson and the game that he called, because it was a big developing story as the game was unfolding, the fact that Malcolm Butler, who's was the hero of Super Bowl 49. You're not going to put him as the top five corners in the NFL, but you're certainly talking about one of the better cornerbacks in the NFL. And to not play him at all, we were trudging through the snow back to the bus to take us to our hotel, and we were chatting exactly that, Jeff. We were saying, you know, why you like to send messages as a coach, but not in the Super Bowl, surely. And so part of me then wonders, did Malcolm Butler stray into Eugene Robinson territory? I mean, how bad did it get for Malcolm Butler to be sat down for the entire game? And if you're going to sit him down for the entire game, Jeff, why make him active? Why not activate one of those other sort of eight players that you've made inactive on game day? It was just a complete head scratcher. And I get the fact that you try and send a message, you know, you're going to toe this line or you're going to toe that line. But you're right, you don't do that necessarily in a Super Bowl. And so that lends me to think that this was something pretty serious that transpired.
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are smoking guns, if you will, about this thing. When Roe said in a press conference or in an interview that, you know, that Butler had, you know, that they had practiced in that package all week with Butler. That's one that makes me go, huh? And then they didn't play him. Mm-hmm. And then two, I think the fact that he was playing on special teams, you know, he was holding up the gunners on punt return, and he was out there on special teams. Now I really start to scratch my head, because if you're well enough to play on special teams, it's not an injury thing, obviously. Mm. So now it comes down to how in the world, and you're only playing man to man, how in the world can a guy who's been one of your best players for 3 years just all of a sudden in a week's time, you know, his skills dissipate to the point where he's not even on the field, and you've got a you know, special teams guy, probably if you dress seven DBs, probably your seventh DB in the rotation down there trying to cover, you know, the other team's number two receiver. It just baffles me. Now, that indicates to me that there was obviously something else involved. The issue is going to be, will we ever know what it actually was? There's talk I've heard from guys I've talked to that there was, you know, issues off the field and, you know, and then also, you know, with tardiness and some other things. So, but again, you're talking to take a guy out of the Super Bowl, Neil, we're talking about that's got to be pretty serious.
Well, Philadelphia said, Jeff, they noticed it early on, didn't they? And they got Alshon Jeffrey in a couple of favorable matchups. Now, that changed as the game went on. New England countered and put Stephon Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey, but then Nelson Agholor kind of went off. So, clearly, New England were playing shorthanded in the secondary. Belichick said it was a coach's decision. Malcolm Butler was quoted afterwards as saying, they gave up on me. He was clearly told early on, Jeff, because he was crying through America the Beautiful, and you could tell that he was emotional about something. And he said there was some other stuff, but Butler kind of alluded to saying, you know, what's out there is not true and not what I did. But it's all very cloak and dagger at the moment. And you know the Patriots aren't going to spill the beans on this. And if Butler did something bad...
No.
He's not going to tell us, so it may be that we never know, but it's one of those that goes into the whole kind of Barrett Robbins, Eugene Robinson, mysterious Super Bowl stories, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and the sad thing, if you're a New England fan or if you're a New England player, is, you know, in a game that close that was decided by so many explosive plays, and, we counted at one point in the offense. I had 18 plays of over 15 yards or longer in the game. That's unbelievable in an NFL game.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, statistically, 65% of all the passes thrown are thrown under 10 yards. Well, that game was full of big plays. I mean, big, huge plays. And again, as you look at the game, when Blunt had the long touchdown run or the 20-some yard touchdown run that he had, New England's in the wrong personnel. Now, again, how much of that was that a contributing factor? Because they didn't get Philadelphia brought in Isaac Seumalo, an extra offensive lineman, and Ertz. So they had Blunt, Ertz, Seumalo, right? So you got a big formation. All the big guys are on the field. They only have two receivers on the field. New England's out there playing nickel with five DBs. They have nobody to set the edge. Chung came up late and tried to do it, but they just got, New England never does those kinds of things. So that leads me to think that, you know, obviously their substitutions were screwed up too, and how much of that had to do with the fact that guys were playing that weren't planning on playing.
Certainly one to monitor as we go forward with the off season, because it did have a big impact on the game. Let's talk about Doug Peterson, Jeff, in his first Super Bowl as a head coach. And my first impression as I settle back in and think about this Super Bowl is that Philadelphia did exactly what Jacksonville kind of couldn't pull off in the AFC Championship game. Jacksonville kind of shut it down and tried to hang on to what they had against New England in the AFC Championship game. Philadelphia... It was almost like they knew what they had wasn't going to be enough against Tom Brady, so they kept the foot down, and Doug Peterson never shied away from calling an aggressive game, including the Philly special touchdown just before the half from Trey Burton to Nick Foles.
Yeah, Neil, I was so proud of Doug because, you know, he stayed aggressive. We talked about it during the broadcast that Favre had come in, Brett Favre, his good friend, had come in to speak to the team, and his message to the team was, you know, keep your foot on the gas, keep your foot down and keep the pedal to the metal and go. And, you know, Doug called the game that way. Two fourth down calls, when the book would say kick the field goal, right, or punt the ball down in tight and make them play the long field. But he knew that his defense hadn't gotten a stop all day. I mean, not one. I mean, not one.
Yep.
So if you can't stop them, then you know you got to outscore them, and that means, you know, you got to do things that the book says you shouldn't do. And that's, you know, then that's coaching with your gut, and that's calling the game with your gut, and that's what guys, particularly who are ex-quarterbacks, have the ability to do at a younger age in their career. And I was, like I said, for a guy that was coaching high school football 10 years ago, I was really, really proud of Doug.
And he was showing an ability to listen to his players as well, Jeff. If you go on to NFLUK.com or NFL.com, you can watch the sound effects videos now, which are always a great insight into the way the Super Bowl played out. And as Nick Foles jogs over just before the half with that fourth and goal from the one, it's Nick Foles who suggests the throwback to the quarterback, the Philly special, as they called it. And Doug Peterson straight away is like, yeah, let's go, let's do it. And it was interesting. If you watch it, Deion Lewis is mic'd up for the Patriots. And he turns to another teammate and he just says, they just hit us with our S, you know what. And he just hit us with our stuff. And he said, they're like Madden at the moment with all their big plays. I mean, they had the Patriots off balance. Tom Brady said afterwards they were never able to play the game on their terms, the New England Patriots. But Doug Peterson showed a willingness to listen to his players and to roll the dice at the right time. I think we all felt when he went for the throw to Zach Ertz on fourth and one, Jeff, we were all talking in the studio about how you would rather have it in Nick Foles' hands than that defense, the way Brady was playing on the other side.
No question. And again, I think Doug, like I said, called the game with both his head and his gut, and that's what great signal callers do. Like you say, listening to his players in every situation of the game, he tried to get the ball to his playmakers and the guys that he felt could make plays. I just really felt that they did such a great job of making New England, scramble every possession that they got. Now, on the other side of it, I think what gets lost in this whole deal, and nobody's talking about it, is just how freaking good Tom Brady is.
Because you lose
your vertical threat in the first half, when Cooks goes out of the game, he made throws. and you look at the guy, Josh McDaniels, for all the, we're going to talk about that and what he did to the Colts, but my gracious, he's got, Rex Burkhead ripping off long runs. He takes Chris Hogan and sticks him on a double move. And you say, that's not the guy you want running that, because if it's Cooks on a double move like that, it's a touchdown. Hogan gets dragged down from behind because, he's not fast enough to outrun the DB. But, it was just a fantastic game on both sides of it, offensively. Yeah. Defensively, not so much.
No, Danny Amendola had 8 catches, 152 yards. Chris Hogan, 6 for 128. Gronk had 9 for 116. Brady was 28 of 48 for 505 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. That was a Super Bowl record in terms of yardage. Jeff, even right at the end, now the only thing I think you can level at Brady all night is, perhaps what was the clock like in his head when Brandon Graham comes around. But I think that pocket closed on Brady really quickly, so I think that would be really harsh. I think Al Michaels hit it right on the head in the commentary when he said, Father Time has no idea where Tom Brady lives. I think this is a Super Bowl loss that does nothing to diminish Tom Brady's legacy, because with less parts around him, especially on the defensive side of the ball, he went down absolutely swinging. And even to the point, Jeff, they take over first and 10, on their own 10-yard line after that ill-advised reverse on the kickoff return. He throws 3 incompletions. He's almost sacked at the goal line. And the next thing you know, New England are at midfield with a chance to throw it into the end zone for a Hail Mary. He still got the ball into the end zone at the end of that game when he was almost sacked on his own goal line. The guy's like a machine, and the machine doesn't really know how to lose.
No, and you know what? That is, again, like I say, you can talk, again, there's a lot of things, a lot of discussion points about this game. You can talk about his, not finding Foles to shake his hands after the game, all yada, 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 all that stuff. But the bottom line is the guy performed at an unbelievably high level and gave his team, just like you said, Neil, gave his team a chance on the last play of the game. That ball's bouncing around out there, and they have a chance to win the football game. Now, what was the final score of the game?
41-33.
Right, so you look at the final score of the game, how different could that last drive have been if New England has 4 more points on the board that they gave up on a missed field goal and a missed extra point?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's so many things about this game. Like you said, there are reasons to be critical of New England's coaching in this game, right? How in the world you're giving the ball to Rex Burkhead on a reverse off your goal line? First of all, it's going to take, every second counts in that situation.
Yeah.
It's going to take more time, right? And if Rex, even if the thing works, Rex Burkhead's not going to outrun anybody to the end zone. So, you know, it just was not a call. Like, I'm just looking at it. I'm shaking my head. Now, on the flip side, again, same thing. Nobody talks about it, but what a great job by Philadelphia's kicker hitting that ball with height and making it so that they couldn't down it, because it came down in the field of play, so that they couldn't down it and get the ball at the 25-yard line with no time off the clock. So, again, small little details in the game that if you're not a football guy or you really don't understand football, you just kind of, they just go right over the top of them. Mm. And those are huge plays in that game that, you know, so, again, what do you say? You say, to me, the Philadelphia coaches, frankly, I think out-coached New England.
Jeff, 2 years ago, we tore Cam Newton a new one for being a bad sportsman and a bad sport after a loss. So let's try and examine this Brady stuff. I will give you full disclosure. I hadn't seen the story. I saw a headline of it. I haven't read too much of it. But Nick Foles confirmed afterwards that Brady didn't find him. Brady was Foles was trying to find Brady as well, to be fair, and they didn't. What's your take on this? All I will say is that one of my big bugbears is there are too many people on the field at the end of a Super Bowl. I'm not making an excuse for Tom Brady. I don't know if he deliberately shunned Nick Foles. I don't know enough about the story, but I'll just tell you there are hundreds of people on that field who probably don't need to be on that field that make it worse for players at the end of a Super Bowl. Just maybe your take on it, because I don't have all of the information on it, but we should address it because we did with Cam Newton.
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, you have been down there in that environment. Mm. Right? I haven't. So you can speak to it much better than I can. I've been at the end of a Grey Cup, two Grey Cups, you know, and that's our championship game in the CFL. I've been at the end of a World Bowl championship it is a mess. It is a mess. Mm. Now, that was a very, very, very bad sideline situation. If you remember Richard Graves,
yes,
he came to us with a picture that he had shot on the sideline of Gostkowski's got to move people out of the way just to get his extra, his field goal work.
Couldn't even do his three steps.
So there were way too many people on the sideline. You know, I mean, it just was a zoo. And then after the game, obviously, you know, you can speak to what it's like after a game. But the confetti's falling, there are people all over the place, fans are rushing the field. You know, all those sideline extraneous people are on the field, the media's on the field. Well, could he have found him? Probably, if he wanted to, bad enough. But the fact of the matter is, it was the last play of the game. There's all of that confusion. And I'm sure he wants to get the heck off the field out of frustration. So I think he did a good job in the press conference when he kind of got settled a little bit, which is typical Tom Brady. He's a pretty clever guy, and he's got some media savvy. He did, he threw a bouquet at Foles in the press conference. But, you know, again, I think that if he had to do it over again, he'd probably try and find it because, again, it's not, you don't want to tarnish your legacy. It's interesting. There was one thing that I saw, Neil, and I'd like to address it, is that, you know, if Cam Newton does it, you know, he's a punk and he's a thug and all that other stuff, and if Tom Brady does it, we just kind of gloss it over. Mm. And I think there's a little bit of truth to that. I really do think there's a little bit of truth to that because, you know, and we tend at times to label guys and, you know, because of other behaviors that Cam's had, we label him a baby and malcontent, you know, front runner, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And Tom seems to get a pass on that. So again, I think it's more being made of it than there really is, but I do agree with you, Neil, that if he really wanted to find him bad enough, he would have probably.
Yeah, just looking at this CBS sports story, it says Brady did shake hands with Fletcher Cox, And so they're kind of alluding in the story there to saying that if he had found Foles, he probably would have shook hands with him. Foles got hurried away quickly for a post-game interview, but these quarterbacks always meet at midfield. So there is something there to it. I guess with the Brady and Cam stuff, Jeff, is you, and you're right, it's a label thing and it's a perception thing, but you build up a certain amount of collateral with the media, and maybe that's where it was different.
Yeah, I think, you know, and as we you and I have talked about this in the past, that, you know, the easiest thing to get in pro football is a label, and the hardest thing to get off you in pro football is that label. So, you know, again, I think that that is just the way it is. I thought I saw yesterday a picture of Chris Long and Brady after the game.
Right.
So, you know, obviously he didn't just run off the field.
No. There were a couple of big replay reviews, and thank goodness, Jeff, this season of controversy in terms of the catch didn't end with Al Riveron making the call from New York. They let the officials on the field decide that Zach Ertz's 11-yard touchdown from Nick Foles would stand up, and thank goodness, because the biggest game of the year, you just didn't want it decided by officials. They've got to clean up this whole catch thing, because clearly Zach Ertz had caught the ball, turned upfield and dived into the end zone. But because he hadn't gone all the way to the ground, that's not completing the catch by the letter of the law. But I'm just glad that common sense prevailed, because I would have hated for the season to end that way.
Well, yeah, I'm with you, and I agree with you. And I know that the commissioner addressed that during his press conference during the course of the week. But how about the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Pittsburgh Steelers fans?
Yeah,
because
consistency.
How much different was that than Jesse James? And if Jesse James gets that catch, Pittsburgh's playing in the Super Bowl.
Jeff, this is where I think I think Al Riveron has been given, either been called into the commissioner's office or has been given a phone call. Not during that replay review, but I think he's been reminded that we're not officiating these games from New York. We are looking for clear and obvious evidence to the contrary. And because it wasn't there for either Corey Clement's touchdown or Zach Ertz, we got a proper interpretation of the replay rule, which is you only overturn it if it's obvious. I don't think that was happening around the time when Kelvin Benjamin's touchdown was being overturned, when Jesse James, Austin Seferian Jenkins for the Jets, I don't think that standard was being applied earlier in the regular season.
I agree with you, and I'm sure, Neil, I agree with you 1,000% that during the course of the lead up to the Super Bowl, because they have meetings with the officials, that somebody in the league office, maybe as high as the commissioner, said we cannot have a situation in the Super Bowl where a play is decided from New York unless it is clear. And what does it say? What does the phraseology of it say clear, right? I mean, and frankly, I think Chris Collinsworth, you know, was baffled by the call, because if you apply the rule as it's been exercised over the course of the regular season and the playoffs, it's not a catch. Mm. And like I said, right now, if I'm Pittsburgh, I am livid, because that's our. We should be playing in that Super Bowl if you base it. That's the inconsistencies, Neil, that drive coaches and players and, frankly, fans around the league crazy with the officials.
Jeff, how do you think Minneapolis did as a Super Bowl? I know you don't like the cold, so you know, that's a little bit different. And what about the night on the Wednesday where we go out with the Around the NFL podcast guys? We went out with them for dinner. And you made your way separate from me, but I was with our producer, Alex Mason, and a couple of other guys. Richard Graves was there, a couple of cameramen. And we get dropped in a blizzard 12 blocks from the restaurant. 12 blocks from the restaurant. I end up arriving at the restaurant on the back of one of those rickshaws, you know, the bicycle ones. And it's like got a tiny piece of tarp over it. The driver or cyclist was an absolute lunatic who was screaming and singing his way around the streets of Minneapolis to Johnny Cash, and that's the way you arrive at a restaurant. But it was just a bizarre week in really temperatures which were colder at times than the than the Arctic.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you're in a rickshaw, you want to be in, like, I don't know, in Thailand someplace.
Right.
You know, you don't want to be, I was shocked. I saw the little video that you guys shot from the rickshaw, and I'm thinking to myself, this is priceless television right here.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, come on now. You know, the one thing that I will say, and this is because I had the same issue. We went down to shoot our piece, our last Inside the Huddle with Josh down at the one of the NFL hotels downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And to get back out of town on Saturday to our hotel was an absolute circus. I mean, there was not enough, you know, there weren't enough cabs, there weren't enough, even the Uber drivers. Now, that $25 trip, that, you know, it was a $25 trip to get down there. It turned into a $150 trip to get back out of there. And
they saw you coming, mate.
What's that?
They saw you coming.
Yeah, I guess. And they knew that I wasn't going to say no when I was standing there shivering.
In a blizzard, yeah.
But so there were some things like that that were disappointing. I thought the people of Minnesota were fantastic. I mean, you know, they put an advertisement out for 10,000 volunteers. They had 30,000 applications. There was one lady I met that was, you know, volunteering at the stadium who was from Arizona. She and her husband came up to volunteer on their own, flew up on their own dollar and volunteered at the Super Bowl. It was just fantastic stuff. Yeah. Now, stadium was beautiful. Game was fantastic. You know, the weather, and not so much.
It's just harder. It's harder to get, and it's not so much for us because we're kind of there doing our job. But it's harder for the fans to get out and about, I think, in what was actually at times quite dangerous temperatures. But I'm with you. The people were fantastic. They really kind of appreciated. We turned up for opening night to go to the media opening night, and we had to walk about 100 yards. We must have had about five people just telling us you're only another 20 yards to the entrance, and you're almost there, just around the corner. And it was the same when I checked out at the airport. It was like, do you need any help? Where are you going? You know, what can we do for you? They were fantastic. The stadium, Jeff, is the most amazing stadium I've ever been in.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But I think those people were like, you know, like Roland Amundsen on his Antarctic expedition. It's only, you know, it's only five more blocks to the South Pole.
Yeah, you can do it. I think they were just worried that we were going to pass out in the cold outside. Let's steer
you
away.
Know what? I was like you, Neil, at the end of the game. I was a little worried that some of those Philly fans that were so full of antifreeze would fall, you know, would fall in a snowbank somewhere and be found in March.
That would have been quite serious if anyone had got too drunk and not managed to get themselves home safely. But thankfully, no stories of that. Let's talk about Josh McDaniels then. Kind of relates to the Super Bowl. We were expecting New England, after their loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, to part company with Matt Patricia. He has become the head coach of the Detroit Lions. We expected Josh McDaniels to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Already had a lot of assistants in place who'd signed contracts. First of all, Jeff, this is the problem with that whole nudge-nudge, wink-wink thing. The NFL needs to do away with that rule and just let teams sign coaches that are still involved in the playoffs. First of all, that would do away with all of this, but there is also a large amount of this that falls on Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, I agree with you, Neil. I think the you know, it's a little bit like free agency, you know, where now that they have a free agent window before free agents start so that we can stop all the nonsense with tampering and, you know, the nudge, nudge, wink, wink phone calls from other players to a guy, hey, listen, we're going to go after, you know, all that crap over. So I think that this situation was, as I monitored it yesterday very, very closely, and I listened to, you know, a lot of stuff about it and talk to some guys in the league. And, you know, Tony Dungy's comments were particularly scathing.
Yes.
He said that there is no reason or no justification to do what he did, where not only turned his back on the Colts after they had agreed to contract terms, but also, you know, basically left those guys hanging. Those, you know, like Matt Eberflus goes from the linebacker coach to the Cowboys to coordinator. Great job promotion. But that thing could have been gone. Mm. You know, if Chris Ballard, and this is really one of the takeaways I had on it. I was really impressed with Chris Ballard yesterday. And I've known Chris since he was an area scout. He handled that situation.
Yeah, he's going to keep the assistance, isn't he?
Andrew Luck stuff, how it all went down, what he was going to do. He stood behind those guys that Josh McDaniels had basically hired. He wasn't responsible to do that. He could have fired those guys right there.
Mm.
So, I'm sure some of those guys were in there working and hadn't signed a contract yet, because that's typically how it goes, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he could have backed out on those guys, and he stood his ground and said, no, we're going to do the right thing. And I think what came out of it was the Colts came out of it better, at least optically better, because of the way they handled the situation. Now, Josh McDaniels is a different story. Obviously, you know, when you are cut loose by your agent, which he was, this is the irony of all this, right? This is the way we talk about the business of the business.
Yeah.
Well, this is as nasty as you can get in the business of the business. Josh McDaniels' agent represents not only coaches, but he represents front office people. So in this case, he's representing Chris Ballard and Josh McDaniel in the same negotiation.
Mm.
Now, how in the world is that not a conflict of interest?
Right. Yeah.
Because you're trying to get the best for both guys. Well, you know, if that guy's that good, then let him go to the Middle East and let's get peace in the Middle East for the first time in history.
Mm.
Because that's just wrong. That is completely wrong. But that's part of the system. And the system has grown that way in the last 30 years.
Jeff, when we look at Josh McDaniels, and it's hard, you know, we don't know whether there's personal circumstances and he just decides he doesn't like it, or he doesn't hit it off with Jim Irsay when he does the second interview. He had an interview with Jim Irsay present at the second go-around. But, you know, you're right, optically it looks bad. He got cold feet this time last year, Jeff. He was in the process of putting together a staff for San Francisco, and then he got cold feet, decided to stay in New England. There's a couple of things on this, and the fact that Bob Lamont has cut ties with him straight away, the first thing that most people out there are saying when you read this is Josh McDaniels is now damaged goods in terms of the other 31 teams in the NFL, which I have to believe means he has a nod and a wink that he is Belichick's successor when that time comes. But word out of New England, Jeff, is that he's not getting any more money, he's not getting any more power, and he's not been made any assurances. If that is the case, this baffles me, because he has to have a black mark against his name now for what he's done to those assistants. For as Tony Dungy said, that alone is pretty damaging.
Well, as a guy who's in the business, right, I'm going to give you this perspective. The one thing that NFL owners want more than anything is what? To win.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that NFL or all coaches want more than anything else is the opportunity to keep employed,
yeah,
or to get a promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is, and I listened to Andrew Siciliano on NFL Network yesterday, and I was really disappointed with him. I was disappointed with the whole media, frankly, because it was like the guy's a pariah now. That's not the way it works. I mean, that's the media making a story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the way it works. If you're an owner and you think the guy can help you win a championship,
you can deal with it.
You're going to hire him. You're going to hire him, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hire him. I mean, you know, there's some guys coaching in the National Football League right now have criminal things against, you know, convictions against them, right? Come on, let's it's business, right? It is freaking business.
But, Jeff, the flip side of that, Jeff,
in the business world,
the flip side of that is that Charlie Weiss, who has been in that building in New England and was a coordinator who went on to pastures new, Charlie Weiss actually shared that same belief that that surely Josh McDaniels is the heir apparent in New England now because he won't get touched anywhere else. I think that is quite a harsh thing to say, and you know, that's, you're right. People, you know, John Sullivan told us before, Jeff, you can have three heads and four legs. As long as you know how to win in the NFL, I'm happy to have you in my locker room. So I don't know if Josh McDaniels is done in terms of the rest of the NFL, but Charlie Weiss was of a strong opinion that he was, and that he would have to be staying in New England to eventually replace Belichick. So it's certainly out there, that school of thought.
I think that there probably is some truth to that, and I can't believe that Mr. Kraft, in some way, shape, or form, didn't make it better for him to stay.
Right.
Now, let's look at the other side of it, which hasn't been examined yet. Josh McDaniels is a smart guy, right? He's been to Denver and failed once. You better make sure that the next one you take, right? Because if you're an offensive guy, you're an offensive coordinator, you're going to get two chances most of the time. If you're a defensive coach, you're getting one and that's it.
Yep.
Normally. So in this case, Josh knows he's a smart man. He knows that if he takes a job now, it will be the last head coaching job he gets if he fails again. Mm. So I can't think of a guy that's failed three times or failed twice and got a third time in modern football. Now, so let's look at the situation. Andrew Luck has not picked up a football yet, not even picked one up yet.
I didn't want to go there, Jeff. I didn't want to go there because I'll break out in tears. But I think that's a genuine worry. There's either two things if he's been scared off by the Colts, it's either two things. It's either he doesn't get on with Jim Irsay, or he's, because there's all these rumors that Andrew's going to need another shoulder surgery. Maybe he's seen some medical report that he didn't like. I don't know, but that's certainly a consideration, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I think all of those things, and then you look at that Indianapolis Colts roster, you know, they got a lot of work to do. It's not just the quarterback.
Mm.
They're deficient in the offensive line. They're deficient on defense. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be cautious about that. Irsay is a different guy. He's a wild card as an owner.
Yep.
Right? Just look at past behavior. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying history tells us that. You got a quarterback who's hurt, hasn't picked the ball up yet, right, and thrown. You've got a deficient roster. Now, do you want to put yourself in that position, or do you want to stay in New England where you're going to win, you got Tom Brady, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I'm not defending Josh McDaniels. I'm just saying let's all take a deep breath and really look at the situation without the hysteria that, like I said, Andrew Siciliano should be embarrassed of himself the way he handled himself yesterday on his show on NFL Network. Mm. And I felt bad being a media guy because it was just TMZ TV. And again, you cannot judge until you walk in somebody else's shoes. Now, Tony, I have respect for, and I think Tony's right. It is what he did to those assistant coaches, the wrong thing, right? That is not what you want to do. Chris Ballard handled it well. So I think Tony's comments were justified, but again, to go out and just make the guy like, you know, the second coming of Jack the Ripper is I think a little strong.
Yeah, I mean, it does leave the Colts up a certain creek without a paddle, though, Jeff, doesn't it now?
Well, I think, you know, but again, this was just a fantastic job that Chris Ballard did. What did he say about it? And he's right.
We don't want him here. No.
We are trying to build something here. And you need guys that are all in. Mm. Right? And that's players, coaches, trainers, film guys, everybody. Everybody has to be all in. So if he's not all in, if he has trepidation, if he has second thoughts, then good, go back to New England.
Yeah.
Because Frank Reich or, you know, Dan Campbell or whomever is going to get that job, it wants that job and desperately wants to be a head coach and the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, and he's going to do a much better job because that's where he wants to be.
Yeah.
And a guy who's lukewarm about his commitment.
Yep. I think Jeff, we had a question from Ross Norville out in the mailbag who said, is Josh McDaniel's name permanently tarnished by this Colts incident? Jeff, I think, you know, I don't think we can ever fully know unless, like you said, unless you're in his shoes, not necessarily what he's been offered in New England, but he may be happy with his life. He may be happy coaching Tom Brady. He may be financially rewarded better. He may know that that's not the right fit in Indianapolis. And like you said, he's going to have one last shot. So why not wait another year until the right shot comes up? There could be dozens of reasons. I think the only reason this becomes an issue is because from an optics point of view, it kind of leaves Indianapolis, you know, kicking their heels and now struggling frantically to find a coach. But probably more it's on the fact that he kind of hung those assistants out to dry. But we don't know all of the reasons and thinking behind it, and like there could be many, many. So I'm probably with you. I think unless we, you know, we could all have a job offer in our life that we use to negotiate a better position in our existing job. That's human nature. That's business. You know, so I don't know if we can be as hard on Josh McDaniels as has certainly been out there.
Yeah, and I mean, here's, like I said, this is the sit back, take a deep breath, and again, not to justify it, but just to realize that this is the way it works. You have an agreement with a free agent player, a verbal agreement with a free agent player, and he doesn't sign his contract, and somebody else comes up with a better deal for him,
mm-hmm.
you're going to lose him. I'm just telling you, you're going to lose him.
Right.
It happens every day, right? The same thing is true in every other business, you know? I mean, now, on top of it, Mr. Kraft is a competitive owner.
Right. He doesn't want to lose him.
Josh McDaniels is an asset to him.
Mm.
So until he signs that paper, until he gets on that plane, he's going to keep negotiating.
Yeah.
This is really good stuff to talk about. This is why in free agency, when a guy comes on a visit, you do not want him to leave without signing a contract.
Oh, no, yeah. You don't let him on the plane.
You don't let him get out of the building, right? And the same thing should have been true in this case. They should have got the contract signed, stuck it in a drawer, and said, okay, we'll see you on Wednesday for the press conference.
Right, yep, absolutely.
And they didn't do it, yeah.
I think the one thing being overlooked in this, Jeff, as well, is that because Josh McDaniels is being, as you say, absolutely hammered. And the more I think about this and the more I talk about this, Josh McDaniels has been loyal to the hand that's fed him for a number of years now. He's not, I know now, you know, we can say, what have you done to those assistants? And Tony Dungy has a point on that. But ultimately, he's been loyal to a Patriots team that's been loyal to him.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. He got fired in Denver and was welcomed back in New England. So there's a, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff at play here that on the surface, you know, if you just have a knee-jerk reaction and blurt out an opinion, you know, that's okay. But think about it. Stop and think about it, right? And that's why I say, like, and it sounds like I'm hammering Andrew Siciliano, and I guess I am. But if somebody comes to him and he's done as a free agent with NFL Network, and somebody comes to him, they have a verbal agreement, and then somebody comes to him with a better deal.
Oh, he's got a better deal.
Better for his family. Yeah. So again, if you're gonna take those shots, you better be willing to live that, you know, in your own life. Mm. And that's why I think all of us need to just take a little step back, and you know, take really, really, you know, I mean, Bill Belichick coached the New York Jets for one day and then resigned. You know, I mean, this is not without precedent.
No, and that was, well, that was a mess, Jeff, because he signed a contract and then the commissioner had to get involved and they had to exchange draft picks. At least Josh McDaniels got out before he signed on the dotted line.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, you go back in the history of the game and this is not the first time this has happened. This is not the first time, you know, I mean, so, again, not to excuse the behavior, I think, what he did to the assistants was wrong.
Yep.
But again, I think there's if you want to use a big word, there's culpability on a bunch of fronts.
Yeah, plenty to go around. Jeff, let's just quickly, I want to just touch on Matt Patricia, and then we will answer questions in the mailbag. So, Jeff, I'm sure in coaching you're told this all the time, and I was certainly told this when I went on TV for the first time, and I was told this when I was moved into the corner chair this year presenting, and I was told, be yourself. Always be yourself, because you can't be a fraud, you can't keep up and act. Just be yourself. So why has Matt Patricia shaved his beard off and cut his hair?
I would say that he trimmed his beard and hair. I wouldn't say that that was a full blown
trimmed. He's smartened himself up.
It was that the raccoons or squirrels or whatever was living in his beard probably had to find a new home after he trimmed it up, but. You know, I think he did it out of respect for the organization and the position that he's now in. I mean, there are certain things about decorum. It was interesting when he put the pencil in his ear at the press conference. I guess that's being himself. Who did his press conference remind you of a little bit?
Well, that's probably why he cut his head, Jim Tomsula, a bit.
Yep, that's the same thing I thought.
It's an image because thing, right?
There's an old saying, you can't lead a cavalry unless you look good on a horse.
Mm.
Well, there's some truth to that, right? And I think his agent cleaned him up for the press conference and all that. But what was not concerning, but just kind of an alarm bell to me was when he read verbatim his opening comment.
It was
because it kind of reminded me of Jimmy's deal where it was a struggle. And
yes.
You know, when you are in that position, it is really, really difficult. Now, when he went to the Q&A part of his press conference, I thought he handled that much, much better. He was much more at ease. He had all the little things you look for in those kind of situations. You know, did he have eye contact with the people who asked the questions? He knew who the writers were. It's good to see you. Da 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 da. It was much more like a Sean McVay press conference than a Bill Belichick press conference. But his initial thing, was basically reading a statement. He could have had a press. Press secretary do that.
Yeah. That old phrase, you can't lead a cavalry unless you look good on a horse. That's why Ben McAdoo got fired this year. Breaking news.
I'm just telling you, there is some.
Yeah, no, there is. I'm sure there is.
There's some. Mike Tomlin, let me just say this, right? And again, if Mike Tomlin wasn't Mike Tomlin and working for the Pittsburgh Steelers, would he still be working when we look at how some of the things that he's done, or his team has underperformed? That's my question. It does hurt you at some point, and every situation's a little different that way. You know, I mean, Andy Reid, who's kind of a frumpy guy, seems to get a pass all the time because he's had clock management issues forever.
Mm.
So, you know, I guess it's an individual thing.
Take a few questions from the mailbag to wrap up. Jamie Super says, what next for Nick Foles? Does he move elsewhere? What do you think, Jeff? He's got one more year on his contract with the Eagles.
I just don't think so. I mean, I people have asked me that question. I think if you're Doug Peterson and you're Holly Lossman and you're Jeffrey Lurie, you're going to say, hey, listen, we got a quarterback who's a franchise guy, but he's coming off of a knee injury, right? And I think one lesson that we learned is you better have two, and if you're going to make a run, because you look at the Packers and what happened when Brett Hundley had to play, it collapsed, and they're not the first team that's had that happen to them. So, they are very good on defense. Yes, they are. They're much better on defense than the Packers are. Yes, they are. But again, I think what you see in what was evidenced in Philadelphia's year is a lesson for everybody in the game now, that the game has become such a quarterback-driven league that you can't. I mean, in deference to Sean Dale, who's my buddy, right? I'm going to tell you something. You win by scoring points in
right.
this NFL.
Yeah, we saw that.
This is not. I mean, yeah, I mean, and it's really that's what it's come down to, Neil. I mean, your defense has to get you enough stops, and that may be one, which is all they got
right.
in that game the other day. But, you know, it still comes down to turnovers. It's still, but you have to score points in this league. And if you don't, you are not going to win.
Mm.
And so, the 2001 Baltimore Ravens, they ain't happening anymore.
Mm. Question from Anthony Bullock, who says, I was in Minneapolis to watch my Eagles soar to victory. Was it the most one-sided Super Bowl in terms of fan support that you have experienced? Jeff, I actually said this as the Patriots ran out of the tunnel on our Sky Sports coverage. I said they might as well have been wearing the white Stormtrooper outfits. It was like the evil empire. Fly Eagles Fly was reverberating around US Bank Stadium all night long. I would put it up there with a couple of other recent Super Bowls that we have attended. I was on the sidelines for Super Bowl 50, and I thought the Denver Broncos fans completely outnumbered the Carolina Panthers. And the Super Bowl in New York, I thought the 12s really travelled, and there was great support for Seattle against the Denver Broncos. But certainly that was like an Eagles home game at times, wasn't it?
Well, I think there's and again, this is painting with a very, very, very broad brush. But I can remember our buddy Nick Holling calling the New England Patriots fans a bunch of tongues sandwich eating. I can't remember, but you get the drift,
yeah.
right? The Chardonnay crowd, and I think there's some truth to that. Philadelphia, you got to understand, New England. This is kind of oh yeah, here we go again. Well, it's good to be back. This is I think there's maybe a little sense of entitlement amongst their fans, and I think the Eagle fans who here's a very, 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 down to the core way to say it. I'm using the washroom after the game, and there's an Eagle fan in there, and he's saying to the guy next to him, "I've waited 52 years for this." Right? He's probably
for the bathroom.
53 years old, but
52 years to get in the bathroom.
But that's the part I'm talking about. Is that this was new to them.
Yeah.
They have not been there and done that. This was a big, big, big deal. Watch the parade today.
Oh my
find
goodness.
Out just how big a deal it was. I heard that when the Phillies won the World Series, they had 1 million people, guesstimate of 1 million people downtown. I heard the Philadelphia policeman say on television yesterday, they expect 2.5 million to
wow.
be on the streets of Philadelphia.
Jeff, last question comes from Stefan Goddard, who says, Kendall Fuller apparently found out he was being traded on Twitter. Do the Washington Redskins have the worst front office in the NFL? Jeff, just to expand on that, we were talking to Kirk Cousins as well. Kirk found out on Twitter as well. So Kirk Cousins found out that Alex Smith had been traded to Washington. Kendall Fuller finds out he's going the other way. I just think there are certain circumstances where the NFL, which is a great product, people could just be a little bit classier. So John Dorsey cut Jeremy Maclin last year by leaving a voicemail on his answer phone. I mean, come on. I mean, and so I put on Twitter, shame on the Washington Redskins last week for the way that Kirk Cousins found out, for the way that Kendall Fuller found out. And then maybe that was a bit awkward to do that just before Josh Norman's joining us on the studio. But I thought, to hell with it. That's not how you treat players. I just think, I wish, and it's not just a Washington Redskins thing. It happens a bit too often around the NFL. And I don't think that's one area that the league helps itself in. I really think that should be dealt with and addressed. And people should treat players with a little bit more class.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, I agree with you 100%. I think particularly in that organization, there seems to be a pattern of not handling those kinds of things. I mean, when you mispronounce the name of your starting quarterback in a press conference, that's a pretty good indication that there's some issues there, which I think they did with Kirk. I mean,
yeah.
I believe.
They did. They called him Kirk five times.
Yeah, so again, that's one, that's almost like on purpose. That's like you're taking a shot at the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me also say this, that it's really tough in this day and age to keep things quiet. That's one of the things that amazes me about New England, because with all of these, quote, insiders, and, you know, I'm talking about guys from Peter King to Rappaport, all those. I mean, they're all fighting, clawing, scratching, pulling over one another to get a scoop. So they all have moles inside of the walls of all 32 teams.
Right.
They all have access that frankly they shouldn't have. So to keep something like that quiet is really, really difficult. Now, I'm not absolving the Redskins or the Chiefs. I'm just saying that I know the business, and those guys are so deeply embedded inside the organization to get information, because that's how they make their living, by scooping people and by coming out with a story. The greatest organizations are the ones that you can't penetrate. And, you know, the ones that you can are usually... That's an indication of weakness inside the organization, because somebody inside is talking when they shouldn't be.
Jeff, that happens across the board as well. I was traveling last month. I was traveling across London in a taxi to host a Facebook Live for NFL UK to unveil the London games for 2018. By the time I got to the venue for the big announcement with a Facebook Live, it was all over the place. It had been everywhere. It broke out of Philadelphia, and that was where Philadelphia Reporter had all of the games, and you just think that's just one example. It's out there all the time.
Yeah, well, you know what? I remember that day because, you know, a number of people at Sky had tried to get you to say where the game, and you didn't roll over. But that's unusual, because most guys, if they have information, see, here's how it works, Neil, and this is phenomenal stuff to talk about. You're a guy in an organization who wants to move up, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the ways you get your name out there as a hot guy is you trade information.
Yes.
So you go to one of these guys that's one of these reporters that's a, quote, insider, and you give him information, and then what, somewhere down the road, what's the payback? Well, one of those guys says, this guy is going to be the next, you know, great general manager in the National Football League, and he's the hot guy. And all of a sudden, the perception is that you're that guy, right? So you sell information for, to move your career along. That's the way it works. I mean, and anybody says that it doesn't work that way is lying to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, fascinating stuff. We've been all around the houses today, and that's really how we'll carry on for the rest of the off-season. We will be with you every week through the off-season, with the exception of next week, because I'm going skiing. But apart from that...
You're going skiing, and that's amazing. You're going to be skiing in the
French Alps.
The French Alps, and I'll be doing a clinic in the Austrian Alps. We ought to yodel the next...
I'll get to the top of a mountain, give it a good shout in your direction, see if it travels. And
I'll get one of those Alps horns, you know, that horn that they use.
So let's try that. Well, if that fails, which it will fail, we'll be back the week after next, and we're going to... Why don't we kick off the state of the franchise then, Jeff? Because that's always a good off-season thing to start digging into the teams. I'm not sure the bottom three teams, but I know Cleveland are in there, so it'll certainly be Cleveland.
Well, Cleveland never gives you a shortage of things to talk about. So, you know what? Today's was a great show. I mean, it was a great, great podcast, because we covered some ground that, you know, that normally you don't cover in these kind of things, and I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
Yep, we are going to be back then the week after next, so we're going to take a little break on Inside the Huddle, and then we'll be back the following week, and Jeff will be warming up in Hawaii, won't you, Jeff?
You got it, buddy.
There we go, going home. Good stuff. All right, until then, say goodbye to the good folks, Jeff.
Aloha.
We'll see you all in a couple of weeks.